like after they finish saying.
Questions being raised with regard to what's referred to as repression. It's a general kind of a question. That is to say, the idea of repression of the instincts, the sexual instinct, the aggressive instinct, it doesn't really matter what the instinct is, but there is a phenomenon called repression. And the question is being raised, what is the view of Judaism with regard to the issue of repression? The way to approach this kind of question is, first of all, to explain what is meant by repression. Now, Judaism, of course, maintains that one must be in a state of control of the instincts. That's pretty obvious. Many mitzvos have the distinct purpose of training us to be in control of the instincts. With regard to simple things like eating, a person can't just eat whatever they feel like eating without first inquiring as to whether it's something which is permitted or whether it's prohibited. So that in and of itself imposes a certain type of a discipline, a certain type of control. And even if the matter should be something which is permitted, still, before you can eat, you have to make a bracha. You have to engage the mind, which takes you out of the realm of selfishness, just being out to gratify the self, and you have to consider, where does the food come from, and what is the purpose of the food, and pretty soon you're thinking about God. Sublime ideas. The same is true with regard to the sexual instinct. There are curbs that are placed upon the free expression of the sexual, virtually every instinctual phenomenon. It's not only the physical speech, which is very significant, because most of the instinctual energy of a person is not expressed directly through the actions themselves, but essentially through speech. Aggressive speech, slander, gossip, and the like. So Judaism places a tremendous amount of controls over the instinctual side of the person. However, the question is whether repression of the instincts is the appropriate way to go. I would say that there, when you speak about repression of an instinct as opposed to control, it usually presupposes a certain attitude towards the instinct. That is to say that people that are repressed have gone above and beyond the arena of controlling the instinct. One can control the instinct, one can acknowledge that one has an instinct, and one does not have to look at the instinct as being disgusting, abhorrent, but there's a certain recognition that one has to control it. So that the one major difference will be that someone who is not repressed but in a state of control, in those situations where the Torah maintains that it's permitted, that one can indulge, one can gratify, so the person will do so with the full enjoyment that the person is entitled to. And the Torah does not maintain that you're not permitted to have any sexual gratification, for example, within the framework of the correct situation within marriage. And even within marriage, there are further restrictions when the woman is menstruating, when she's in nida. Within the realm of the permitted, and Chazal even mentioned, Chazal were not squeamish, that it is a mitzvah to partake of the sexual relations on Friday night, because that's considered to be a form of Onik Shabbos, which shows you that Judaism is not not squeamish, that acknowledges reality and associates the celebration of the Shabbos, the observance of the Shabbos, part of which is oneg, enjoyment, and insofar as this is an enjoyment, just like eating good food and drinking wine and things of that sort, wearing fine clothing, so sexual relations is also a form of oneg. So a person who has sexual relations on Shabbos with that intention that contributes to the general enjoyment of the day is fulfilling a mitzvah. That itself will show you that Judaism is not repressed. Its attitudes are not based upon any type of neurotic, heaven forbid, any type of neurotic attitudes. So a person who is repressed is in a different state. It's not really a state of control, I would say. Truth of the matter is that it's lacking in perfection, because there is a certain perfection in control. Control presupposes that the person acknowledges the drive. The person has a desire for the thing. The person is not repressed. The one who is repressed, at least on a conscious level, has wiped out the desire. Now, where do you see, from a specific halacha, that, to the contrary, a person really is not supposed to be in a state of repression, but a person reaches a high level when they do experience the desire, where they're in a state where they can relate to the desire, but are able to overcome it by virtue of the power of the mechanisms of control? There's a specific halacha which illustrates this. The Rambam, in the second chapter of the Laws of Tshuva, which is commonly translated repentance, more literally return, speaks about something which is called complete tshuva, or the ultimate type of tshuva, highest level, would be a case where the person who's repented from a sin has found himself in a situation with the very same object of desire, the one that he originally sinned with. And he separates himself only because of the phenomenon of tshuva, for no other reason. Not because of fear, or not because of weakness. How so? He gives an example. If someone sinned with a particular woman, a sinful sexual relationship with a particular woman, and the person did tshuva, then after a while, this person was alone, found himself alone, meaning to say in a situation where he had the opportunity to repeat the sin. And he remains in the same state of love. He has the same desire, and he's in the same state in terms of his physical strength, his virility. But as he hasn't undergone some kind of a physical change, so the desire has lessened because of that. The Rambam goes further into mention that he's in the same place, the same locale where he committed the sin. I think that's interesting, because that too apparently is a factor, because there's certain associations, the romantic phenomenon, the place. So all these things bring to mind a certain fantasy, a certain desire. So the desire is at its peak. It hasn't weakened any. And the person separates and does not violate. This is someone who is considered to be one who has fulfilled the tshuva gemura, the complete tshuva. This is the most perfect tshuva. It seems clear from this that the Torah does not advocate that a person should engage in repression. I'm saying even more that a repressed individual, to be in a state of repression, therefore those individuals who refrain from sin because of the phenomenon of repression, which is to say that the person regards the thing itself as being filthy, as being disgusting, as being evil, and develops a certain attitude about it where it becomes like a taboo to them. That type of a thing is a false attitude. I'll quote another source. Chazal say, for example, that you should not say, Efshi b'achilas chazir, Efshi b'arayos. That is to say that I think this statement attacks the issue directly. That you should not say that these things are disgusting. That pork, forbidden foods, are disgusting. Or the arayos. Forbidden sexual activities are disgusting. Now, there are many people that do speak that way whenever the subject comes up. Someone will mention about something on television or about how people dress in a very immodest kind of a fashion and certain type of sexual activities that people engage in. And there are people that are, that is filthy, that is disgusting. And in their minds, that's the whole basis of the prohibition, because the thing is inherently disgusting. But Chazal is saying that you shouldn't say that. Well, I would say the reason, I would explain the Chazal, is, first of all, is that really true? It's is it disgusting, or is that you've developed a certain attitude, and within your own subjective framework, you've made it into something which is disgusting? Rather, Chazal say, you should say efshi, that it's something attractive, it's desirable, you should be truthful, you should be honest. Uma'eseh, but what can I do? The avi shabashamayim gazer alai, my father in heaven decreed upon me, which means to say that a person is not expected to distort their basic emotional responses to certain things. We have to acknowledge the truth. The truth is that there are natural desires. Aside from the fact that repressions are dangerous psychologically, that it's not a simplistic type of a phenomenon, that as a result of repression, so you'll refrain from certain activities. Generally speaking, when that occurs, it's dangerous because if you understand human psychology on a deeper level, there's very powerful instinctual forces behind these things. And when instinctual forces are repressed, they don't just go away. You can't just abolish them. They tend to come out in hidden forms, in disguised forms, and they can have a very harmful effect on the overall personality of the person. So from a purely psychological standpoint, it's not a healthy thing. I'm not approaching it from a purely psychological standpoint. We're asking a question as to what the Torah advocates. Well, we would imagine in general that the Torah would not advocate something which is dangerous to oneself. But I'm not using that approach over here. I'm showing you directly from Torah itself that in terms of the development of the spiritual capability of the individual, insofar as it's a perfection to be a kovesh es yitzro, to have the ability to conquer one's instincts. That's part of human perfection. That's part of human development. That presupposes that one is in conflict with the instinct itself. But the mechanism of repression seeks to remove the entire conflict. If you raise a person with the attitude that these things are disgusting, so then the person will refrain from them, but it won't be through the mechanism of control, it'll be through a mechanism of repression, of revulsion. So that's really having a harmful effect upon their psyche, but it's also robbing them from the very thing it's trying to preserve. It's being done in the name of sort of religious objective, but the true religious objective is to give the person the ability, the capability, to be able to control the instincts on the basis of his wisdom, on the basis of his knowledge, on the basis of his understanding. Just like it would be wrong to create some type of a pill, which if a person were to take that pill, they would lose all their desire. A perfection pill, so to speak. So everybody would take it, and suddenly they'd have no aggression. They'd have no desire to hurt anybody. They'd have no desire for sexual gratification. They'd have no desire for the so-called things that people, ordinary people, who are religious, regard as being bad. Would you really be doing that person a favor? That would be contrary to the will of God. Because the will of God is that we should be able to conquer our yetzer on the basis of the utilization of our free will. But if you remove a person's choice, desire, if you remove a person's desire, so there's no free will involved. This would be a similar thing. The objective of many people in religious circles is not religious perfection. It's something which superficially appears to be that. That is true. You can raise people with certain attitudes so that they'll refrain from certain behaviors, but just because they're refraining from those behaviors doesn't mean that that refraining is reflective of the perfection that Yahadus wants to achieve, which is Kovish as Yitzro. Not to mention all the other negatives that are brought about as a result of repression. It's an unhealthy phenomenon. So, clearly, that's not the objective of the Torah. As you see in the case of tshuva, the tshuva gemura, the one who has done the ultimate tshuva, is the one who's in a state of desire, who has the capability, who has the strength, the desire, and is able to restrain himself and to redirect those energies into that which is the good, into the positive. That's the prescription for perfection. And repression, the method of repression, is contrary to that. Does not achieve that objective. It has a very crippling effect upon the psyche, and it prevents a person from achieving religious perfection. To make it clearer, the objective is not the abstention, to cause somebody to abstain from certain things. the benefit is in the mechanism, the manner in which the person is able to refrain through control, of the instinct, through a conquest. And that, as I said, presupposes that the instinct is in a certain type of a state, that he's not crippled himself through developing repressions. The difference between the Jewish way and repression is that I'd use the word suppression. Suppression is you control the instinct. Chazal say that when this monster, so to speak, this sexual drive overpowers you, moshchei the base medrash, drag it to the base medrash. That is, when a person is overcome by powerful instinctual forces, he suppresses, means conscious control and redirection of the energy. You get involved, get your mind involved in study and learning and ideas, and it will provide an outlet for the discharge. It's called sublimation. Then all the instinctual energy will be discharged in a sublimated manner. Now, obviously, a person, most people can't live their entire lives that way. The more advanced the person is, the greater amount of enjoyment and satisfaction the person can get through sublimated activities. But a person has to know his level. That's why Chazal advocated early marriage, which was the way it was through most of Jewish history until recently, recognizing the fact that it's a big problem once the person's sexual drive comes into maturity. A person is sexually mature, what, about 13, 14, that, you see the problem in our society today. To the contrary, this society, the whole culture, seeks to reinforce, to strengthen the sexual drives through the music, through the movies, and all of that, and that doesn't provide an adequate situation in which people can get married. They can't get married, so what they wind up doing is having sexual relations anyway, and it causes tremendous harm to the person, to society, disease, pregnancy, and so on and so forth. Now, that's a big problem. Judaism sought to avoid that problem by arranging early marriages. That would be ideal, that at a reasonable time, a person would not have to spend many, many years between the time of the onset of the sexual drives and the time at which, according to halacha, they could fulfill them. But it's not a perfect situation. What a person has to do is to control, to suppress, to sublimate. Suppression is not the same as repression. In repression, as I said, you develop a certain attitude towards the instinct and you render it into something which is in and of itself disgusting. That's not a healthy phenomenon. Christianity is a good illustration of the dangers of sexual repression. They're having a tremendous problem, scandal, with the abuses, sexual abuses of the priests. And there's many factors. I'm not saying it's a simple thing. Perhaps some of the people who were attracted to that in the first place were perverted before they even became priests. But I would say that certainly you also have the phenomenon of attempting to impose a very unrealistic lifestyle, that many of them, perhaps, became priests because of sexual repression, which is the attitude in Christianity, that sex inherently is an evil phenomenon. That's why the priests are supposed to represent some type of an ideal, and the ideal person would be someone that doesn't gratify their sexual instincts. This is absolutely contrary to the truth of Judaism. That's a denial of God's will and God's infinite wisdom in the creation of Adam. A person is obligated to live life as God intended him to live it. That is, he's human and he has a certain instinctual needs. And in order to be healthy, you have to take care of your health. You have to maintain your physical condition so that you're in the best possible physical and emotional state so that you can serve God, which does mean that a person does have to satisfy, gratify the emotions and the sexual instincts in a controlled and intelligent way, because that's what's healthy for him. So there's no, cannot be, any attitude that there's a certain good in negating any of the natural elements of physical existence, the drives, the sexual instincts, and so forth. It's true that the path of perfection, the more perfected an individual is, the greater the extent that the person is involved in sublimation, in utilizing the energy towards so-called higher pursuits, the obtainment of knowledge and wisdom. But we don't have this concept, except for very, very rare cases of someone that's so perfected that they abstain. The idea of abstention is considered an evil, as the Rambam says. A person that abandons the path of moderation and goes to the extreme of renunciation is considered a sinner. In conjunction with this, the Rambam in Hilchos Deot, third chapter, says, lest a person say that since envy and desire and honor and the like are a bad path and they remove a person from the world, I'll separate myself from them to an extreme. I'll go to the other extreme so that I won't eat meat, I won't drink wine, I won't get married. See, there is a certain powerful feeling that certain religious people have, that there's holiness associated with an abstention. That's a very, very powerful idea, especially in the world today, that the people find out about someone and it's mentioned about how the extent to which this person abstains from any kind of a physical pleasure, it's like this is a certain kind of greatness. Or the person says they won't dwell in a pleasant place and they won't wear nice clothing except for harsh clothing like sackcloth and wool. That is, a person who seeks to avoid any type of normal physical pleasure and to the contrary only will experience a painful physical situations. He says, and the like, kagon kohane ha'ov de'kachavim, like the idolatrous priest. You see, this is an idea which is associated with idolatry. That is, you propitiate the gods, they don't believe in the true God, through abstaining from physical indulgences. The Rambam says, gamze derech rohi, that too is an evil path. The osur leilech ba, it is prohibited to live that way. Hamahalech b'derech zu, one who lives this way, nikra chote, is called a sinner. Sharei omer b'nazir, it says concerning a nazir, that's someone who abstained from wine, just wine, for 30 days, at least 30 days. V'chipra lov, he has to bring a karban, and it'll be an atonement for him, me'ashachot ala nefesh, from sinning against the soul. Amru chachamim, the chacham said, Uma'im nazir, shlo piresh, ela min hayayin, if the nazir, who only separated from wine, tzarech kapara, requires a atonement, hamonea atzmo mikol dava v'dava, one who prevents himself, abstains. In other words, that whole philosophy of abstention, which essentially looks upon physical gratification as being an evil, so how much more so is that person a sinner? Lefichach tzivu chacham, therefore the chacham commanded, shelo yimana adam atzmo, that a person should not refrain themselves, ela midvarim shemanato ha-Torah v'vad, except from those things that the Torah prohibited for you. Don't create your own prohibitions. Below yehei oser atzmo b'nedarim u'b'shvuos, and you should not create extra prohibitions on yourself with neder, with oaths, with vows, al dvarim hamutarim, with regard to things that are permitted. Kach amru chachamim, thus said the chachamim, lo dayecha masha asra Torah, it's not enough that which the Torah prohibited. Ela sh'ata oser alecha dvarim achirim, but you seek to prohibit yourself and other things. So you see that aside from the fact that it's wrong, it's also a negation of the Torah. What you seem to be saying is that the Torah is not the perfect system, that it's too loose. It didn't prohibit enough things. So you're trying to project, to impose onto the Torah, a certain religious mentality which is rooted in idolatry. The idea of the Torah, of prohibition, is that a person should live in the framework of moderation, not excessive lust, but not excessive denial, basically, the concept is to recognize that we are human and to remove ourselves from those pains that are associated with deprivations, to recognize the utilization of the physical as a means. You can't take the physical and make that that's hedonism, the purpose of existence. However, to go to the other extreme of denial is destructive of your entire makeup, your entire state of physical and psychological health, and it's prohibited to walk in that path. Let's continue with the language of the Rambam. Yeah, some people are saying, don't be frummer than the Torah, would be a good way of putting it. Don't be too frum. V'alkal advar me'elu, regarding all these things, u'kiyotze behen, and the like, Tziva Shlomo commanded, v'yomer, and he said, al ti tzadik harba, don't be too such a big tzadik. V'al tizchakim yoser, lama tishomim, don't be too wise. Don't seek to go beyond. Know your place. Don't impose your own personal sensitivity, feeling as to what religion ought to be. There's certain emotions that are associated with a religious personality. And a lot of it has to do with the idea that there's something evil in the sexual. That is a negation of Torah. That type of tzidkus, of course a person should be a tzaddik, but that type of false tzidkus, it's alti tzaddik harbe. I could want to ask a question. Why not? I mean, a tzaddik is a perfected person. Why shouldn't you seek to be perfected? It means it's because this is not really perfection. But the person involved in it has a feeling. He feels like he's a tzaddik. It confers upon him a certain sense of righteousness. And you can see it in these people that behave this way. You can see the fault of this type of thing, that many people who engage in these excessive denials, but you see that the emotional, there isn't an emotional outlet. Very firm people that are always being more stringent and negating, they wouldn't eat here, they won't eat that, even where the law would permit it, you do see that they can't escape entirely from the instincts because it does create a certain sense of superiority and aggressiveness, and they tend to look down on other people that aren't as scrupulous and aren't as strict as they are. So this is contrary to the true path. Just briefly, the question is being raised, if that's the case, why did the Torah permit Nazir? What is the idea of the Nazir? If on the one hand we're saying that it requires an atonement because it's an excessive abstention. Simply put, it would fit in with what the Rambam has said, and that is to say that sometimes a person must go to an extreme in order to cure themselves. If a person is caught up with a certain type of an indulgence, overindulgence, or it can work both ways. When a person has become fixated with one of the extremes that is to be avoided, so the Rambam says that the cure of the soul is on a temporary basis to adopt the other extreme as a therapeutic measure until the system, so to speak, is cleansed from the attachment to the wrong extreme. Then, of course, the person is supposed to go back to the middle grounds. So there are situations in which it is wise for a person, and the person senses that they're being overpowered by certain emotions and they can't control themselves, so it wouldn't be wrong to take extreme measures. That's as a therapeutic phenomenon. For example, I'll give you an example with regard to, say, alcoholism. What is the view of the Torah? Re-alcohol. Well, the Torah is not opposed to alcohol. As we've seen, the Rambam says, a person that just says he's not going to abstain from wine, well, that the Nazir is 30 days, but if a person just abstains, that's the false approach. So what's the correct? The correct approach would be with the framework of moderation. In moderation, it's fine. But let's say a person got addicted. It's an addictive phenomenon. You have a big problem in society today with alcoholism. But the solution to alcoholism, according to the Torah, is not to prohibit wine. Rather, if an individual has become an alcoholic, so then I wouldn't prescribe moderation. That's what the Rambam is saying. Then you don't tell this person you have to go back to moderation. Because moderation won't work for such a person. Any amount of alcohol will simply strengthen the impulse and will prevent the cure. This person has to go to the other extreme of removal. Abstinence. Abstinence from alcohol. It doesn't, however, mean for life. Although I understand that today Alcoholics Anonymous and addiction treatment maintains a certain type of a personality. They even want to say somehow it's in the genes, that it's an inherited condition. I'm not taking a stand on those kinds of things, which I think is very controversial. I don't necessarily agree with that. But they say that once a person is an alcoholic, this person has been defined as an alcoholic by definition, and this person must accept abstinence as long as they live. Well, whether that's true or not, I don't know. Perhaps there are some people. I would agree that there are definitely some people that the only way they can control certain behaviors is by complete abstinence, that they cannot do certain things in moderation. But that's not the ideal. The Torah maintains that most people should be able to develop a pattern of living in which they can relate to indulgences from the standpoint of moderation. And the Torah does maintain that it's possible that a person should fall into one of the extremes, some an addiction, and then the person would go to abstinence, and having cured themselves, would then be capable of going back to moderation. So I wouldn't say that for everyone who was an alcoholic at one point, the cure would demand that they never, ever have another drink at all. There may be some like that, I'll acknowledge, but not all. And there are some people that once they're cured could go back to moderation. Provided the person is capable of living in accordance with moderation, that is the superior path than the path of absolute abstinence, according to the Torah.